An HEC and SEMS graduate from 2006, so not that old, but you know, it's been a long time. And I'm here tonight to talk to you about Road of Mars, which is the expedition from Shanghai to London by bicycle that I just finished, 16,000 kilometers, with three main objectives that I will talk about during the presentation, which is to explore, to create, and to do good. So far, everything clear, yeah? Good. This is what we've done. So 16 countries, China, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Iran, Turkey, Bulgaria, Serbia, Bosnia, Croatia, Slovenia, Italy, Switzerland, France, England. And, well, the idea started with many a Shanghai to Paris flights. This is what you can see by the window. I highly recommend you fly China Eastern Airlines Economy because there's nothing. There's no TV, no food, no games. So basically, the only thing you can do is look by the window, and that's what you see. Amazing mountains, amazing deserts. And I've always thought, looking at the window, that, well, I should check it out, definitely. And I was with my friend, Oli, in Shanghai, where I was, I had been living there for 6 years, and my friend for three. And we had been talking many a time of, well, what we saw from the plane window and how we love cycling. And one fine morning, I came to my friend and said, now we got to do it. And we got to leave in 2 months. And he came back to me and said, well, I think we needed to prepare a bit more than this. And in retrospect, it was probably the only smart thing he ever said to me. But that was it was a smart thing indeed, because it does require a bit of preparation. You need to prepare your itinerary. You need to prepare the concept of the whole expedition. You need to bring the sponsors on board. You need to prepare for visas. You need to do a physical training as well, which in our case was a trip in the Sichuan Mountains in China, eating yak sandwiches and drinking yak buttermilk. Very, very funny. And finally, March 28th of this year was big departure day. And well, we looked young and innocent back then. We were absolutely dead scared of what we were going to do. We had no idea of what we were going into. And the good thing is that we had a friend who recorded this day, the departure day, and made a very nice video of our departure day. Oh, there should be sound here, but yeah, I don't know if there's any. Yeah. Ah, good. As my rubber duck. I still have it.
Oh.
And so that was the departure day, and well, we headed due west in the Yangtze Delta. So when you start from Shanghai, you have a good 1,000 kilometers of just factories, basically. That was pretty horrible. So they call it fog there. It smells a bit weird, and well, gradually, so those were coal mines. But gradually, the landscapes became a bit better. This is not the Great Wall, by the way. And it became nicer and nicer as you move west. And, well, the good thing in China is that at every street corner, you see something amazing, something completely unusual, like this. To this day, I'm not really sure if these people were dead or alive. Oh, you see this. Those are... the Gangnam grannies. That's the thing in China. You see a lot of these of people dancing on like any big city. You'll see gatherings of at the time was a lot of Gangnam style. But that's what makes it such an amazing country is at every street corner you see something and you're like, wow, what is this? What's going on? And it's what made it really really fun. Then we headed west again, and the first landmark of our journey was really Zhengzhou, in the a little over 1,000 k from Shanghai, in the Henan province. For those of you familiar with Kung Fu, that's where Shaolin Temple is. The reason we went there is because we went with Operation Smile, the charity we support. For a mission, we participated in 1 week of a mission there, and so Operation Smile is an American NGO that provides free surgery for kids born with cleft lips and cleft palates. So those are typically cleft lips, and well, we chose them for many reasons, but two the main reasons why we chose them is the price of an operation, which is $200 in average. Which is absolutely nothing when you think of it to change kids' future. Also because, so of course, you have, this doesn't look also a matter of survival for these kids. They have problems to breathe, problem to eat, problem to speak. So it's, and in average, it's $200, so it's not much. And also because they had a strong presence in China, and it meant a lot to us because we had been working there for a long time. And so during that week, we spent in Zhengzhou with the volunteers from Operation Smile. 107 kids had surgery, and that was quite an amazing thing to see because all the volunteers, the surgeons, had such an energy that it was quite it was quite something to see, and we really felt like we were part of the team. We did a quick video of a kid that we followed actually through the whole operation. We actually were lucky enough to go to the operation theater with him. Is an orphan who had a cleft lip and a cleft palate as well. And that was just an amazing moment because we saw him before, we saw him after, and that was really one of the landmarks of our trip. So this is a shorter version of a video that is available on our website, if you want to take a look. And we headed west again. That's a good thing with our trip. It's fairly easy. You go west, so you go to the sunset, basically. We headed towards the province of Xinjiang, the west of China. Probably the most boring piece of riding we've done. 2,000 kilometers of just the same. Desert on the left, mountain on the right. And every now and again, a village or a petrol station. That was fairly boring. But then after that was an amazing reward because we made it to Central Asia, namely Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Turkmenistan. So I don't know how much you know about these areas. If you're like me, everything you know you got from Borat. That was my case, I must say. And well, it's slightly different. No one wearing mankinis. We did try to spot them, but no one there. And instead, we saw amazing people, very, very welcoming. And we saw probably the most amazing landscapes in the whole expedition, especially in the Pamir area. So the Pamir is a mountain range that that goes through all Tajikistan. And it's a second, it's basically along, there's a road called the M41, the Pamir Highway, which is the second highest commercial road in the world. So for a week, we were over 4,000 meter high. And that was absolutely amazing piece of riding. That's definitely what we saw, the best we saw in terms of landscapes. Reached the top of the expedition, which was 4,600 something. Really, really well. I was saying it's a commercial road where you hardly see anyone there. There's the odd truck, but a lot of cyclists, a lot of motorcyclists. Basically, it's a bit of a nirvana for all you know, adventure cyclists. This is Afghanistan on the other side of the border, because we go along the Afghan border for a while, and this is when we reach the top. So it's 4,600 something.
5,400, the highest point. Road of Smiles.
So quite an amazing part of the journey. Then we went through Uzbekistan, beautiful place for especially historical sites, because it's along the Silk Road, so you have places like Samarkand and Bukhara that are absolutely lovely. Then Turkmenistan, again referring to a Sacha Baron Cohen movie. I don't know if you've seen The Dictator, but that's apparently made based on Turkmenistan. Giant marble buildings with golden portraits of the president everywhere. A pretty weird place. And they only give you visas for 5 days. So we had to re-dash through the desert. And we made it to Iran. Iran was a big question when we started the trip. Because we were wondering if we should go. Our family said, are you crazy? British Foreign Office said, don't go. The French Foreign Office says, don't go. So, of course, we went. We didn't know what to expect, really. Were we going to meet Ayatollahs making nuclear bombs? Or were we going to meet normal people? And, well, actually, we met normal people, and quite a lot of them. Very, very welcoming again. It's probably the most welcoming people that we've seen in trip. You always get invited everywhere for food, for to stay at people's house. It's quite amazing. What we see on top here is actually the largest Shia mosque in the world, and we managed to get there during prayer time. And we did feel a bit out of place. But it's not, well, people were not staring or anything. They were actually quite welcoming, but it felt quite strange because we had thousands of people praying there. The top right is quite an interesting Iranian special, is their love of camping. They just camp everywhere. So now the thing is, we tend to camp where there's no one, you know, in the great outdoors and we can see the sun rise in the morning. They tend to camp in public places on concrete. That's a big Iranian thing. So every square with campers, so with tents. You need to camp with other people. It's like a group thing. It's quite an interesting thing. We did it quite a few times with you know, sharing our camping site with other people. And this is mean, this peach delster, because it does look like beer. has the same color, and sometimes it even says Pilsner on the label. And then in tiny, tiny characters, it says 0% alcohol. So that's a trick. It tastes of peach and vaguely malty, but it's not beer. So, of course, when we moved west and had and when we headed towards Turkey, the first thing we did was have a beer. And we made it basically all the way to Istanbul, so from the east of Turkey to Istanbul, where we had a lovely stay, and we our family came to visit. I had a presentation as well at Koç University with the SEMS students there. That was quite nice. And after 10 days, we left to the Balkans. And again, we didn't really know what to expect. That's also a constant of our trip, is that we were not really big on the preparation. So, well, yeah, Balkans, well, you know, probably going to be collapsed Soviet-era buildings and, you know, dreadful weather. Whereas, in fact, it was absolutely amazing weather, Indian summer, and rolling hills with really nice houses, nice little villages. So it was a pleasant surprise. That's a good thing. So this is Serbia. As you can see, we were going a lot. And absolutely amazing. You see, you know, houses where you have people making their own alcohol. We were offered a bottle of the local rakia, which is a plum alcohol. Not bad. You have roasted piglets outside the houses as well. Quite nice. Really, really nice place. And then again, northwest towards Italy, where we had our second commitment to Operation Smile, because Operation Smile has a permanent hospital in Milan, so we visited there. And they treat kids from all over Italy and sometimes a bit from Europe as well. So we met the surgeons there and some patients, and it was quite nice. And we organized again an event with the SEMS Club in Milan, where we collected a bit of funds for Operation Smile. That was also very well put together by the SEMS Club Milan. And finally, made it to France. Went through Switzerland. Quite a nice area, really, Switzerland. It's just that we spend as much money in one day in Switzerland as in 3 weeks in Iran. But it's it was still nice. And we made it to the Jura Mountains in France. That was quite something for me. Also because now I could actually understand what people were saying. Not that I could not in Switzerland, but it's a bit of an accent, you know. We went all the way north. Of course, we stopped in Paris to see family and friends and to have a nice welcoming do on the Champs-Élysées. And we made it to London, where we had a pretty prestigious assembly to welcome us. Especially, we had on the top right Victoria Borick, who's the deputy mayor of London. We had the soldier you can see here is a guy called Johnson Bihari, who is the only serving recipient of the Victoria Cross, which is the highest military award in the UK, in the British Army. And he chose to support our cause. That meant a lot for to us. And I was actually quite proud to bring a French flag in the Tower of London. That was quite cool. Except that, of course, I had then, you know, three or four people coming to me saying, "Oh, you see those cannons there? We took them at Waterloo when we beat Napoleon." So I was like, "Yeah, all right. But I did manage to bring the French flag in the Tower of London. And that's it, basically. You can see, well, this and a lot more on roadofsmiles.com. We're on Twitter as well. We're on Facebook. The expedition is done, but the blog is a bit late. So if you follow the blog, we're still in Italy. Don't say anything. We are still publishing articles and videos, so you can visit the website. And of course, you can also donate to our cause. We've raised something like £15,000, British pounds, so that's around 20,000 euros so far. That should we always need more. So thank you very much for listening to me for so long. And if you have any question, really feel free. to Yosk. Well, when we when I think of it now, I can remember really a precise moment that was the all-time low of our expedition. Is, you know, I mentioned the west of China being pretty dull and you know, being the desert, well, we camped one night next to a railroad track, and we had not seen a single train the whole day, so we thought, it's going to be fine. And maybe 15 minutes after we turned off the lights, there was a massive train dashing through. It felt like it was in the tent, because we were literally, you know, 15 meters from the railroad track. And that was every hour after that. And then it started raining, which in the desert can turn very bad, because the sand turns into mud. There was a storm, a sand storm. Well, we woke up at 4 in the morning, having slept maybe half an hour, and we both looked at each other and we started laughing really out loud, because we're like, that, you know, this is the worst that can happen. And now I can remember, you know, it's overall, we were at a low, but in the end, you know, it was quite fun.
Is it working? Oh yeah. I have a question, like, what is your job? Because what allows you to go, like, for half a year or more than half a year to do this trip? I'm just interested, because, like, if you're planning to do something like that in, like, 5 years' time, do you have to think about it already now? Or?
I'll start maybe just with my friend, Oli. He was at Ogilvy, and he went on a sabbatical, so that is something you can do. As for myself, I was working for a company in Shanghai, and I quit, because I wanted to get back to Europe. So, well, you know, it's you can always quit. This is not something that takes a lot of money. All the money, of course, from donations, everything goes to Operation Smile. It does not. Our personal expenses are privately funded, but if you find sponsors to give you the equipment, which is our case, then, you know, cycling and camping outside doesn't cost much. So in the end, you know, it's perfectly doable to do this. The job is not the big thing. We wanted to do it before we have a family, really. I think that's more of a hindrance for doing such things. The job, well, you know, you can. Hopefully, will help me in my career. Maybe, I don't know. I'll see that in a few months.
what training process did you have to undergo before you started your journey?
I think if you do these sort of things, you may absolutely not train. It really depends on how you want to do it. In our case, I think what happened is we're two guys, so of course we're pretty competitive. So he didn't want to be behind, I didn't want to be behind. So I think we both trained quite a lot, and maybe a month before. Well, we did the trip in the Himalaya, in the Sichuan Mountains. That was something like maybe 6 months before the trip. And then for me, a month before the trip, I started doing 80K every now and again. With a bike or on the home trainer as well, but really it really depends on the pace you wanna do it. We did it at a pretty fast pace, because we did 16,000K in 8 months, which is not bad. But if you want to do 60K a day, 50K a day, you can do it, and your body adapts pretty quickly. You know, the only thing is the first month is going to be a nightmare if you don't train at all, But then after a month, you'll be fine. Yep. So of course, initially we wanted to do a bike trip. And then we thought, okay, we want to do a bike trip, but we don't want to be totally disconnected from our career. So we want to bring, you know, we want to have a blog, we want to have a story to tell, we want to have sponsors on board so that we sort of keep in touch with the business world. And then we thought, okay, we're going to do this bike trip, we're going to communicate on it. Might as well benefit a cause. So then we thought of all the charities we could support, and as I mentioned, we chose Operation Smile for many reasons, but also because they were an international organization with a strong presence in China, and we just called them. They've been very supportive from day one. They've done a really, really good job, and when we met them in Zhengzhou, we really felt like we belonged to the team. They're really good people, and they're very well organized. So that was the train of thought. You rely on good people. Because of course we can't, communicate a lot when you're on, when you're cycling 10 hours a day. It's, it takes time. Mobile phone sending emails, but that's a bit tricky. So Rebecca here was a tremendous help for all the communication with the SEMS community. So we and for communicating with the alumni, with the current students. That was really a blessing. So thank you very much. And then we had various people helping. It's basically you need to throw bottles. You need to ask everyone you know, can you help in any way? And then some people donate. Some people just talk about our story. Some people say, oh yeah, I've got this mate, the BBC, it might be interested. And then you just follow up. And I guess we threw a lot of emails, and then we were lucky enough that a few people picked up on it. Sorry? It's, I don't know, it's 1% maybe? Something I'd say around 5% maybe. Every time you think of something, then you just, you say, oh yeah, and I know this guy I've worked with 100 years ago, then I'll just shoot an email very quickly. We were really on our phones most of the time, so we had internet connection. Every country we went through, we had a phone with internet connection as much as we could, so that we could keep on communicating with our followers and with people for help, some people will tell you that sort of kills the spirit of the trip. For us, it was important to stay in touch with the world.
As somebody who's fixed quite a few bikes, I'm curious, did you guys have any technical disasters or breakdowns or?
Honestly, not too bad really. The bicycle we got from a Chinese brand called LKLM. They just started the company, and they specialize in long distance bicycles. So they're really new in the market. So we were a bit test drivers for them. And honestly, I'm not saying this because they are our sponsors, but they did good jobs on the bike. We had punctures. I mean, loads. That's something you're gonna have. Tires. We changed two sets. Pedals. We had to change a bit. And my teammate Ollie had to change twice the whole crank, but I don't know. I think that's because he was just pushing too hard on the pedals, just trying to follow, but no, really, nothing too big. from a technical point of view, that you really want to, when you do something like this, you really want a pretty solid bike, especially with a steel frame, because in case in case you break something, if you have aluminum, then it's gonna be a nightmare to fix, because you can't really weld. If you have steel somewhere, you know, in Tajikistan, there will always be someone that will weld your frame. So you need something pretty solid and something that can be repaired easily.
You said you didn't plan ahead very much. So how did that work with, like, for example, when you were riding through China and there was just nothing for ages, like in terms of having a place to stop over? What if you run out of food? Like, how did you work all that out?
You're totally right. I mean, when I'm saying we're not planning, we were. It really depends on where you are. As you said, when you are in the middle of nowhere and you know you're gonna run out of. I mean, yes, we had anticipated this these sort of things. So especially the west of China, we had we were carrying both 10 liters of water, because water is the key thing. And you can run out of food. If you run out of water, you're in danger. So China and Tajikistan, the Pamir Mountains, because the Pamir Mountains, it's basically a couple of weeks of nothing. You can't buy. I mean, most people there are self-sufficient, so they grow their own things. So you can't buy anything. So you need to prepare. You need to buy food. So in our case, in China, we bought loads and loads of pot noodles. That I will not be able to eat ever again in my life. It's always the same flavor as well. That and porridge with dried fruit every single morning is also pretty terrible. But yes, it's just at some moment when you reach the east of China or Europe, you know you're gonna have towns, and so you can, you know, relax. When you're in more desert places, you need to think ahead. So that was not exactly. No, the only moment I could think of is we ran out of water a bit, and because we were, you know, you need to purify the water, so we were waiting for the purifying taps to act. You need 4 hours for them to work. And so we were like maybe 2 hours short. We didn't have water, and we were two hours short of the purifying tap. So we had to, yeah, we went thirsty for a bit, but nothing too dramatic.
Did you face a situation in which your survival skills were challenged or something like that?
Challenges?
No, like your survival skills. Maybe really bad weather or something like that.
It's quite funny, because everywhere you go, the local people will tell you there are wolves, there are bears, there are foxes. Don't camp. In China, in Iran, everywhere people will tell you, "Are you nuts? You know, there are wolves out there." We never saw anything. I think it's we were a bit disappointed in a way. The only scary moment was with animals. I mean, was with a fox. So I'm not very proud of this, but yeah, we you know, foolishly we our rubbish bag next to the tent. You know, we got sloppy. That's the sort of thing we would never have done, you know, the first few months, because we were like really hands-on in the camping, and then we were like, yeah, the rubbish stays here. And then we heard noise, and it was a beautiful fox, but just a fox. So yeah, nothing too scary. No, the scary moments are with humans, really. We got the scariest moment probably is that we were woken up by soldiers with Kalashnikovs. In I showed you on the video, we were going along the border with Afghanistan, and so that's where 80% of the poppy in the world is smuggled. So there are a lot of border patrols, and so we just camped on the banks of the river, and we were woken up in the middle of the night by shouts, and then we didn't know what to expect, and then we flashed the light, and it was like a Kalashnikov 30 centimeters from my head, and well, you know, that's a big scare. But then you see the uniform, you see the military uniform, and like, okay, that's should be okay. And and then it was okay. And then we had a couple of days after that we had explosions as well on the other side of the border. When you have explosions and you are near Afghanistan, you're thinking drone attack and all sorts of things. And especially in the middle of the night. And so we went back to sleep because there was nothing else to do. And when we saw in the morning, they were actually blowing up the road on the other side. So they were just making the road. Why they were doing it in the middle of the night is a mystery. But that was scary moments I can think of.
If you had to kind of sum up a two or three takeaways, life lessons, if you will, about like. Well, I mean, yeah, you cover 16,000 miles. I'm sure you learned a couple things that are really going to affect you going forward.
Cycling 10 hours a day gives you time to think. That's there's not much else to do. I'd say maybe three things. First is that traveling by bicycle is awesome. It is really cool. Because it's basically slow enough so that you can see the landscape gradually changing, and it's fast enough so that you can make progress. And the good thing is that you see what's in between. You see everything that is in between the big sites. You see real villages, real people, and everybody's really nice to you because you have your big bike. You look like a bum, and you're pretty. They're very friendly. They want to help you. So and you realize that people are friendly everywhere, really, in different ways, but in every country, we had really welcoming people and very friendly. So I highly recommend traveling by bicycle. The second thing I'd say is I discovered how good it is to put some sense in what you're doing. Waking up every morning, cycling, and knowing that you're doing it for a cause. So what you're doing makes sense and is helping people. Is something visible in terms of a peace of mind, so it's just that it feels really good to be doing something for and it helps as well when you're doing it, when you're cycling and you're cycling uphill against the wind and it's raining and you're like, well, I'd much rather be anywhere else. Then you're thinking, okay, I'm doing this for a good cause, I'm helping people. This helps you, give extra strength. And the third thing I'd say is that I think Europe is an awesome place, really. And what I mean by this is, we had, as I mentioned, the Kalashnikov thing. We had multiple, countless border, or checkpoints in the road where we had to hand over our passport. We had police integration in Iran. That was good fun. Okay, the guy just asked it, what do you think about Israel? I'm like, bad. I'm like, yeah, okay, good. And the Iranian government? Good, very good. And that was it. But we were, we got followed by secret services in Turkmenistan. Well, we don't know, but we saw the same guy in two different places in the same day. That says hello, like 100K difference. Bit weird. And it made us think, well, Europe is quite a cool place. When you cross borders, it's all smooth. You hardly have landmines at the borders. It's pretty smooth. And yeah, we're thinking something like the same exists in any other places, certainly not in Central Asia. And I think we were thinking and talking about this with my friend Oise. We were a Frenchman and an Englishman traveling together. That could not have happened 200 years ago. So what we've managed to accomplish in Europe is quite unique. It's quite remarkable, especially in the past 6 years, putting our past differences behind and, move forward to, work together. And that's something, that's time now when Europe is probably a bit wondering where to head. I think it's something, to keep in mind is that what we're doing is quite remarkable for us European. I don't know if you, yeah.
Okay, just one question from me.
Yeah.
How has your, in the same sort of thought process, how has your SEMS experience has it prepared you for this type of an experience? And what might you want to communicate to an audience of SEM students and maybe some that are considering SEMs, how that could really contribute to your
Well, I think it's the SEMs experience for me contributed to the to the fact that I moved to China for a start, well, very practically because I needed my SEMs internship abroad, and I did it in China, and then I stayed in China. But this being open to an experience abroad, first thing I've got from SEMs, and being open to different cultures in general, that's the obvious. But speaking many languages, it helped a lot in during the trip. And not even thinking that what I'm doing is I'm traveling with an English, because we met quite a few French people along the road that were telling me, but you're traveling with an Englishman, that's a bit weird thing to do. And I was like, he's English, but he's fine. And and I was not even thinking about it. I was like, he's just my friend. And that's probably something I got from the SEMs, just not caring at all about where people are from, and thinking I could do business or do expeditions pretty much everywhere in the world. That's easy.
Based on your experience, what would you think would be the next sort of interesting route, or the other route, maybe not your next one, but just something interesting to do?
Well, I'm thinking about it, obviously, and this is not, and in a way, I'd like to keep it unique. So I'm not sure I want to do something this long in the future. So because 8 months is a big thing, but definitely doing sports to help a charity. That's something I will do again in the future. Whether it's running, cycling, kayaking, anything really. But maybe 1 week or 2 weeks. I would like to keep this experience, this long experience, unique really. Well, it's a good question. I would like to go. I would like to go to travel to America, really, because I think I'd like to do America from east to west, or from west to east. I think it's or from, well, then Alaska to South America. That could be something. But then there are just so many things to see, really. Australia could be nice as well. The problem is cycling through the middle could be a bit dangerous. That's seriously challenging for your survival skills, but maybe around it. Definitely I'm looking into many things. And going back to Central Asia as well, I'd like to do it in the future, because that's really an amazing place. I highly recommend it. It was probably the one we expected, well, we knew least about, and it was really amazing. Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, please.